Hello, respected viewers. It's George from Ireland. So here I am in Horton, Berkshire, the small village where the renowned poet John Milton spent a sojourn from 1632 to 38. And here's the gate lodge going towards the farmhouse where he lived. So we'll walk towards it whilst I speak. Anyway, it's in this sylvan idyll, very close to what was then Windsor Forest, which still exists. The muse of other poets, Alexander Pope, lived not so many miles away at Binfield for a few years. Anyway, so Milton was born in 1608 on Bread Street in the City of London. That's another financial district. Most of London's not the City of London. And his father was a highly successful merchant, so they were not short of a few groats. Anyway, he was schooled, he was tutored by, I think, a Scotsman who attended St Andrews, if memory serves, University of St Andrews, and he was raised in the Church of England, where Milton became somewhat sceptical. He always called himself a Christian, but he drifted away from the Church of England whilst not embracing the dissenters. He believed in religious toleration, so he was a couple of centuries ahead of his time, and he was closer to the Quakers towards the end of his life, the Religious Society of Friends, who George Fox founded around that time. George Fox, who we met, Fox being the one who invented the expression speak truth to power. And there is a farmhouse up there. Ooh, you can see it through the trees. And a bit of it is original. Most of it is not, apparently. Birken Manor Farm. I mean, there is that surname. Just think of Jane Birken, who died not so long ago. And my uncandid camera, CCTV. I don't get a very clear image of it. I wish they opened these things to the public. But anyway, so he went to Trinity College, Cambridge, where he covered himself in glory. But he found that the curriculum was rather staid. Of course, he was raised on an unadulterated diet of classics. So he spoke Latin like a native, and it really was a spoken language amongst the intelligentsia at the time. Ancient Greek dipped into Hebrew. So he was almost a hyperpolyglot. Anyway, so he came here, he had plenty of money, and he did an awful lot of writing. And he read really just about any fine literature he could get his hands on. He even learned Dutch and most of the Western European languages. And he made friends with some of the first movers and shakers in what was then the 13 colonies, some who'd come back to England. Often their parents had been born in England. Anyway, the seminal event of Milton's life was the English Civil War, and he very much took the parliamentarian side. He thought that Charles I was a tyrant, was a nincompoop, and so on. And yes, Parliament ought to sit, and there ought to be free expression. So one of his most famous works, and forgive me if I mangle the pronunciation, is Areopagitica, which is named after that an oration by Isocrates, Areopagitikos, if I got that right. I said it's this hillock on the edge of that mountain in the middle of Athens, not the Acropolis. I don't know what you call the actual mountain where it is on the top. Okay, where public trials have been held and so on. So he said, Milton, that of course there ought to be publication. There ought to be no pre-publication censorship, because if you wanted to print something, you had to submit it to the censors, and Charles I wouldn't have anything uncongenial to himself printed. Remember, there was a limited number of printing presses. Printing was very pricey. Literacy then was about 40% of the population, higher amongst males and females, but often that meant literate to a very low level. Anyway, so but pamphlets were becoming increasingly popular. Newspapers had started around about 1602, but of course you can only travel things, transport them at the pace of a horse and cart. So it took days to get to remoter regions of England. The news was not really up to date. Certainly a 24-hour media cycle. Anyway, the English Civil War came. He threw in his lot with the parliamentarians, with Cromwell. He became Cromwell's secretary in foreign tongues, managing his correspondence, receiving language correspondence in several languages, replying back, because Latin as a language of diplomatic correspondence was declining. People were starting to use their vernaculars. So, you know, print capitalism was starting. It's a redolent of Benedict Anderson's celebrated magnum opus, what's it called, Imagined Communities, where there was map, museum, and what was it, the other thing? Well, obviously a printed language. So these began to emerge as more important, even in intellectual circles, than Latin. By the 18th century, I mean, that was like gone in diplomacy. But then he went blind and so on. But anyway, his most famous work is surely Paradise Lost, about Adam and Eve, the fall of man, how they're expelled from the Garden of Eden. But he also jubilated Cromwell's campaign in Ireland in 1649. So just months after Charles I, already a short man, was made a head shorter, Oliver Cromwell descended on Dublin, and he wreaked rapine and ruin. There was the notorious massacre at Drogheda, which, whilst he didn't order, he didn't countermand either, or indeed at Waterford as well. And not a lot of people know this, he made his son, it wasn't Richard, it was one of the other ones, was Provost of Trinity College Dublin, something Trinity would probably rather forget. So as for familial life, well, Milton was blessed with connubial bliss. He married thrice. He was blessed with five children. He was once married to a Miss Woodcock. And I had a Mr. Woodcock who was significant in my life, not in that kind of way. Many moons ago and not so many miles away from here, which there are very few people with that surname, so perhaps they're related. Which reminds me of another thing. He got married for the first time at the age of 38, which was then positively geriatric, because senescence began younger as life was harder and, well, they didn't have skin creams or whatever else. I don't think he was smoking a pipe, but they didn't have anything to rejuvenate themselves, and often people had lived grueling lives of really toilsome work on farms and such like. Remember, at this time, still something like 80% of the population were engaged in physical labour, most of that farming. He was much younger than his brides. When he was 38, he married someone who was 20, and as both his other two wives were much younger than they predeceased in the first two. The last one was 31 years younger than he was. So he wrote this famous poem about doing his duty to God, which we thought was penning poesy, saying, "Doth God demand day labour, light denied? As in, now I'm blind, do I still have to compose poetry?" Because he felt that was what the Almighty had gifted him with, and therefore it behoved him to live by his quill and compose such beauteous verses as he possibly could. So he very much took up the Protestant cause and called upon the Lord to avenge his saints on the continent and so on. But he was aghast by religious intolerance, even amongst the Protestant denominations, and he felt that the Religious Society of Friends were the most forward-looking and the most merciful towards others. He was not actually a pacifist himself. So he was quite a wealthy man. But then obviously there was the Restoration, and he very much fell from favour. But he wasn't actually penalised. He was not involved in politics as such. He hadn't been one of the commissioners to sign Charles I's death warrant. So he lived in relative obscurity for the rest of his life. And I can't remember where he's buried, but even in his lifetime, he was regarded as one of the most magnificent poets around. Now, the Augustan poets were heavily influenced by him. The Romantics, towards the late 18th century, they drifted away from him and said the trouble is he was more or less penning Latin in English, and it wasn't an authentic English voice. He was perhaps too cerebral. It was too stilted. For many people, it struck a false note. Anyway, that's just a little bit about John Milton, who spent 6 years here rusticating. He later lived in Buckinghamshire, near Great Missenden, if memory serves. So he'd moved around the country quite a bit. Anyway, thank you so much for watching this video, and make sure you subscribe to my channel on Patreon and donate with the greatest possible generosity on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. All right, toodle pip, I'm switching off now from Birkin, where Birkin Farm.